There we have it. The new intro. It's here. The boys are here. Everyone's here. It's time to talk some Maple Leaf, sitting down with Dylan D. Fournier and my boy Clark Monroe. Boys, it's been a while since we've all been in the same room. How's everybody?
Been a while. Sorry, I stole that from Dylan. Dylan said that pre-show and I just had to steal it. Sorry, Dale.
That's okay. That's okay. It has been a while. I'm doing good. Hockey is officially here. I have played two beer league games, so hockey's in full effect for Dylan right now, and feels good.
Clarky, how about you?
I just golfed today. Last weekend, pretty much a golf here in Saskatchewan, so we got it in, me and my couple of my old buddies, and so it wasn't a good round, but at the end of the day, it's still golf, and that's better than not golfing, I always say. So that was good. It's been a busy summer. Lots of golf this summer, actually, which is great for me. I haven't been... I golfed 16 times this summer, which for me is like the most I've golfed. It's the most I've golfed in like 10 years. So it was felt great getting back out there. Got to play baseball again this summer. That was a blast. And we're going to California next week for a baseball trip. I'm coaching a team. So that's a travel ball team. We're going down. It's a bunch of high school kids here in Saskatchewan. We're going to show them some universities down in California. And me and my buddy that I went to school with down in California, so it's a ton of fun. I'm super excited about it, and anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're talking about the Leafs, so can't wait to get back into that either.
All right, let's dive into it right now. Let's talk about one guy that's kind of been noticeably absent from the Maple Leafs, and there's been some quotes that come out about this guy. I know Clark really wants to dig into this topic, and that is one Timothy Liljegren. For me, we talked pre-show, I think this guy is being shown the door. I think Timothy Liljegren is done with the Maple Leafs, and may he pop off and be some Forsling type down the line, or, hey, even Anton Strålman-like for the Maple Leafs when they got rid of him as well. Maybe. Who knows? But right now, he does not appear to be fitting the Maple Leafs' plans and what they have going forward. He did not look good in his showings in the preseason. Doesn't look like he's a Berube player. And when you have guys like Myers and other young defensemen, Rafai says hi, in the lineup over Timothy Liljegren getting his reps and getting prepared for the season, it speaks volumes to me. But Clark, fill me in here. Where did it go wrong for Liljegren, and why is he not fitting for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, you know what? I think for a couple of years there, he was the kind of guy that, you know, right shot defenseman, young guy, they just really wanted him to work. And it, to me, it just hasn't ever really gotten to the point where it has worked. They've tried him on the top pair with Morgan Rielly. That never stuck. They've tried him with Jake McCabe in the past. That never stuck. They've tried him with big guys in the past, and it just never seems like it sticks. And they always end up putting him on the third pair. Now, he got his payday, and I think that was more of a, you know what, kind of a reward for being around so long more than anything. They got his payday, two years, $3 million. But to me, that payday for the management side of the Leafs was, it struck me as soon, and if you look back at our group chats, yep, I guarantee I said somewhere right after they signed him that that's a perfect contract to trade, because yep, they got him his money. It's that perfect mid-level contract that helps you get a contract back. Like, let's say you wanted a guy, and I'm just going to throw a name out here because I've kind of thought about this in the past. If you want a guy like Colton Parayko, who makes $6 million, you have to package something to get six and a half, I think. You have to package something together to add up to $6 million, and the Leafs don't have anybody in the $6 million contract range. So to me, you put together a couple mid-level contracts, Liljegren's $3 million being one of them, maybe a Kampf, $2.4 million being one of them, build on that with whatever else pieces you get, and then you can trade for a guy who would fit the Berube lineup a little bit better. And as soon as Craig Berube came in, I'm like, I don't think he's going to stick around. Then he got his deal. I just think that's a tradable deal. 2 years, it's not locked in. So if it doesn't work out for the team, it's not like they have to be locked to this guy for 7 years, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, they've tried this guy. What is he now? 24, 25, which
25. Yeah.
Which isn't old. He's not over the hill.
No.
But at the same time, they've had him now for six, seven seasons in the organization. And I just don't think he's taken the step that they've wanted him to. I still think he's a defenseman that can fill a role really well in the right situation. It just hasn't been the right situation with Toronto. And I think they're not in a situation where they can wait around for this guy any longer. They need somebody to step in and fill shoes. And I think that's why, and I know we're going to get into this probably But I think that's why they went out and got Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I think that's why they went out and got Chris Tanev. I think that's why they went out and got Yanni Hakanpaa. They want their defensive group to be older, more experienced, ready to go, and they can't wait around for guys like Timothy Liljegren anymore. So it just everything screams this guy's out the door. And I think, again, with the contract the way that it is, it just adds that much more to it.
Yeah, Dilly, what do you think about Liljegren here not making – looks to be the opening night roster for the Maple Leafs here?
So I don't know if you guys listened to one of the recent Spit and Chicklets episodes, but they had Tree Living on. And one key thing that I heard Tree say was that he wanted a plethora of defensemen in the system so that he had options. And a lot of these options are big, big defensemen. And to Clark's point, Lily's not the biggest guy. And you also said that OEL is a great replacement. He has experience. He went to the Stanley Cup final this year. And I think it all points into the direction of he's kicking out the door. And, of course, Berube may push someone like getting Parayko on the team, but obviously you'd have to pull the tooth of St. Louis. But, yeah, I would say that Lily's time is drawing thin here in Leafland.
Yeah, I don't think Liljegren's going to be much for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I don't know if there's much of a package either that you do here, unless you're trying to move camp out the door. Then you add a couple sweeteners, too, to make that whole thing work, maybe with a team like St. Louis, or maybe you're comfortable having the wiggle room of $5 million in cap space to keep yourself afloat with all the bodies you want to keep around. You look at all the different names around the Maple Leafs right now, whether they're on LTIR, IR, it doesn't matter. They want these bodies here. They don't want to be putting a whole lot of guys through waivers, which they did not today. And speaking of that, we bring in the fact they put Matt Murray on waivers. They put Marshall Rafai on waivers. So both of those players were expected to be ones that were sent down to the minors. And yes, Clark, that's a beautiful segue. I know. But you look at Matt Murray.
It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
Listen, smooth as fucking silk. I've been at this for a little bit. but Murray coming off the double hip, we all knew he was going to go down to the minors. He's going to play in the AHL, get his game back, get his confidence back. And maybe he becomes a third goalie the Leafs used throughout the season. Hello, Martin Jones last year. Or maybe he's just there to be a veteran voice for Hildeby. And for Rafai, there's a lot of people that are very high on this kid. I don't know if he makes it through waivers. I think he will get claimed by another team just as he's about to hit stride for the NHL. The only thing that may stop that, guys, is the fact he's got a new 2-year deal in his back pocket from the Maple Leafs. And for Murray, we know he's not getting claimed, but they also did what they did with Martin Jones, the bonus for Thursday, that if you claim him, you got to pay him the $100K.
Yeah, I mean, we all knew that that was going to happen, and I think none of the waivers so far have surprised me. I was a little concerned, I'll say, a few days ago, where I was like, I wonder if any surprising waivers are going to go down. Like, are they going to maybe throw David Kampf on waivers? Are they maybe going to throw somebody else like that on waivers just to see what happens? But it none of that really happened. It's a lot of stuff that I was kind of expecting to happen in terms of guys going back down, or guys who, like a Matt Murray, for example, who was kind of a numbers thing, but we all kind of expected that. We all knew that was going to happen. They were going to carry three goalies to start the year at least. And so none of the waivers for the Leafs specifically surprised me. Some of the other waivers maybe surprised me a little bit.
A little juicy out of Calgary there.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the Islanders. I was going to say Detroit. I was going to say maybe a couple of guys there, maybe.
Hey, man, I thought Pierre Engvall was a surefire NHLer forever, especially with that 7-year deal, 6 years left, multiple million dollars on there. Same with Justin Hall. Oh, I just the five-minute muffin's going to be cooking down in the minors, man.
I just saw a Twitter thing that had Kyle Dubas reacting to the Leafs winning the game. And it was like when Pierre Engvall and Hall are on waivers. I was just laughing my ass off.
Too expensive for the Penguins' blood, though, unfortunately. Yeah.
I saw a tweet. I don't know who sent it. I don't know if it was in our group chat or not, but somebody sent a tweet that said the Montreal Canadiens should claim Pierre Engvall so they can have two Slavkovskis.
That was, I believe it was TML Fan and Van, I think it was. Might have been him or one of the other ones, but yeah. Absolutely awesome. Yes, go ahead and claim Montreal. Have fun with Pierre Engvall. But yes, a few former Leafs, James Reimer as well, on waivers. here. So we'll see maybe who gets picked up, who doesn't. I do think Marshall will fly. Doesn't make it through waivers, but I hope he does. Obviously, he's hitting stride here with the Maple Leafs. So camp was what to you guys? We look at camp here and we say, okay, we want to see the guys come through. We want to see guys step up. For me, I had my eyes. I love Easton Cowan, and I think I know we all know where he's going. It's back to junior for another year to boost himself up down in London to hang out with Dilly. Frazier Minton, we know he didn't get to participate in camp because he got injured. We know he's probably going to start applying his trade in the AHL this season, so that was a given. But I put my eyes on guys like Hildeby, which he turned my head. We knew what he was, but really this guy is a big athletic goaltender that's very technically sound that everybody needed to, really get their eyes for. And I don't know what Dilly's grabbing down there, but he's cracked, snap, crackling, and popped the mic there. But I look at these guys and I say, okay, for me, it was Hildeby, it was Patches, it was I want to see Yanni Hockenpah come along. I want to see how Tanev looked in the Maple Leaf uniform, OEL. But most of all, I mean, for me, it was how is this team reacting with Austin Matthews now being basically the guy at the helm? What is the message on the bench? We've all seen the docuseries. We've seen what William Nylander actually said, not only to Marner, by the way, but it was directed to Matthews as well. It was not just one player. He was addressing both of them and basically telling them to can suck it up. Start shooting the puck and doing what you need to do. So now Matthews is the guy with the voice. I want to see how that happens and how it all unfolds. But for you, what was camp, Clark? What was camp to you? What were you looking for? And what was the thing you said, hey, this has to stand out or this has to happen?
Yeah, for me it was I wanted to see the goalies. I thought Joseph Paul was fine. I thought Stolarz looked great in the couple games that he got. And another thing to keep in mind, too, is that most teams do this, if not all teams do this, but the road games are usually the rookies and the bubble guys, and the home games are the starters or the veterans. So you saw Stolarz get all of the road games for the most part, and Joseph Woll got the home games, which you kind of gives you the indication that Joseph Woll is the guy they're going to give it to, unless, of course, he's injured, and Stolarz is going to be the backup / 1B or whatever you want to call it.
Woll didn't really play that much, to be honest, which was
concerning
to me.
Yeah, Stolarz looked great, though. So I think from the games that I saw, that's comforting, that you get that comfort that the guy they brought in and they paid a couple bucks is going to be solid. And, that save that he made on Tarasenko, for example, and then kind of laughed at his face after, looked around the defenseman, laughed at his face after. I think that was awesome. I think he's going to be solid, and that's a really good thing. Matt Murray and the couple things that I saw him in looked okay. I mean, he's Matt Murray. He's going to be fine. He's not going to be expected to play hopefully more than 5-6 games, unless he has to Martin Jones it and save our season in January or whatever, like last year. But I really don't think that that's going to be the case. I think Joseph Woll will be fine. I think he's going to end up being fine. And, the goalie tandem will be great. That was the big thing that I took away from it for me. That was kind of what I wanted to see in camp was just the goalies. Some of the younger guys, like you said, on the defense, I wanted to see a couple of guys there and just how they mixed in. Really wanted to see Nick Robertson take off, and I know he's one of our next topics here, so I won't go too deep on that right now, but really wanted to see him take off. Thought he did really well. Wanted to see Pacioretty. I wanted to see Steven Lorenz, and I really liked what I saw from Steven Lorenz. I think he's going to be a fine little player if they can figure out his contract.
Someone already did the math. I think it was why can't I talk the name off the top of my head? But anyways, he did all the math for it to make it work. And yeah, he's definitely going to be a Maple Leaf come, I don't know, whatever time tomorrow when they sign him to a 775 deal.
Yeah, like that's the thing is that we have, Max Pacioretty and Steven Lorenz, they got to figure out their contracts. So I think for me, camp was kind of just like, okay, how is this going to shake down? Like we're at a point now with this roster, especially because they kept most of the roster from last year. They supplemented it. They changed a couple names in and out. We know what they are. It's more about just getting their flow back, getting their, getting their touches, getting their timing. And how is this going to shake down with these last little couple spots? That was really what camp was for me. I wasn't too worried about the Grubankins necessarily. I wasn't too worried about like the young guys like Topi Niemelä didn't barely play. Like
man, those to me that's a player all day long here.
That's a player. I'm just saying like we kind of knew going in that he wasn't probably going to get a roster spot unless he like blew our socks off. And a lot of people really liked the guy, super pumped about him. Glad he's a Leaf. I'm really excited to see how he does with the Marlies over the course of a larger sample size. But what I was saying was, you know, we kind of knew what the roster was going to be. How are these extra fringe pieces going to play out? Because that was really the biggest question mark for me going into camp. So I think we kind of have an idea. Now we just have to see how these contracts go and if they have to make a move to accommodate these new contracts and how that all works out. That's what camp was for me.
Dylan, what was camp for you? What was the moments for you? Obviously, I know Easton Cowan, you had your cowboy hat on, ready to rock and roll for that guy, but I don't think this season's the season for him.
You know what? And I'm fine with that. I want him to come back to junior, put up 150 points, and go and grab that Mem Cup that he's been digging for. He proved to me actually in camp like that he knows not only how to shoot it, but also pass. I saw a couple great dishes from him. I think it was on the power play on the road to Nicky Bobby. I think that truthfully, like this camp was who's actually going to dig in and make a point that they deserve a spot on this team. And for me, we'll get to it later, obviously, was one certain player this year. And another big thing was, what does our identity look like? And I messaged the group, I think, the other day. I think we have finally started to see an identity in the Maple Leafs. Like, it used to be, oh, you got the top six and the bottom six, and they looked quite separated. But now it looks like you got big bodies up front. You got big bodies down low. You got guys that are going to dig in the corners for you on the offensive zone. You got players that can put the puck in the back of the net. For me, a lot of the last 5 years, it was just the guys that could put the puck in the back of the net, and that's how it kind of was. Also, defense. Defense has obviously shifted. We just talked that Lilly might not even have a spot on this roster, and that, to me, obviously, looking back last year, says a lot because – he was a top four demon. I think that this team is looking at bigger players and players that can compete come playoff time. And I think that's huge for the Leafs in general.
No, definitely it is. Okay. So we'll move off of the camp and we'll talk about who impressed. And for me, Clark just mentioned his name. I really like this game and I want to see him maybe get a little bit of a stint here. But with so many bodies right now, it's hard to. I like Gabrielkin. I like what he's brought. I like his tenacity, like the fact he'll throw down for his teammates. He's got a little bit of skill as well. We'll dig for the puck like you just talked about, Dylan. But I like this player. And, I mean, I know we fall in love with guys at camp all the time. And last year was Connor Timmins right up to the last game when he hurt himself and blocked the shot and was gone. And, you know, he was leading everybody, including one Connor McDavid in points in the preseason. Everybody was fired up about it. But this year, for me, was Gribankin. I liked the way he played. He really caught my eye. He was someone I basically, let me steal the Shaquille O'Neal. I wasn't familiar with your game. Okay, that's what he was. He just came in and really wanted to impress Berube to the point where he did, and Berube was talking about him, which is huge. If you're coming in for your first camp and you're getting the Chiefs' attention, you're doing the right things. So obviously now he needs to translate that down in the AHL, grow his game some more. But I think when it comes to call-ups for forwards, if you're looking for a perfect prototypical bottom six guy who can dig and probably play on your left or right side, because he'll learn both sides just to be a versatile weapon for this team, I think you start looking at this kid and what he can do. But that's who impressed me. Dylan, who impressed you here at camp?
There's somebody that is obvious, but I won't say him.
We got a whole part carved
out for him. I know, exactly. I'm actually going to say Steven Lorenz. He kind of brings a different energy to the lineup that I really love. And truthfully, I don't know if I really paid attention to him in Florida, which I feel bad for. But I think
he wasn't an everyday player in Florida either.
No, right?
Be very clear.
But I think he's kind of forced the thumb of, like, I can steal this last centerman spot or last, like, line spot and kind of push camp out of the lineup, which says a lot, but I know he doesn't always play center. But for me, that was kind of huge. And I think he just kind of brings an energy to the lineup that that Chief likes. What about you, Clarky?
Yeah, honestly, there wasn't a, I mean, there's a couple names. I really like Max Pacioretty. I thought, he didn't like blow me away, but at the same time, I kind of knew going in that this is like 36-year-old Max Pacioretty who's been through some injuries lately, and
Still putting up points, though.
he's still putting up points, and he's just one of those types of guys where, to me, it's like he's the type of veteran that for years now we've been kind of looking at other teams who get these vets and like, why couldn't we get a guy like that? Like, I know we got, Thornton and we had our fun with, those that
That's always
little
not bad
block
for
of
them.
time. But at the same time, it's like we never got a guy who can maybe fit into the top six. And I don't know if Max is going to necessarily fit into the top six all the time, but he definitely looks like he probably could. He's probably going to get some power play time. So I really liked him, just to kind of see that he still got it. And it was really weird to see him in a Leafs jersey. So that was kind of another cool thing.
I love his kid saying it's the favorite jersey he's ever had.
Yeah. So like that kind of stuff was really cool. They kind of gave up on the Nylander at center thing a little bit. So
Really quickly again.
I kind of wanted them to stick to it finally. I was
Would
saying
have
in the
been
group
nice to
chat.
see JT in the three hole, man.
Yeah, super nice. And I was saying it in the group chats like over the summer when they were kind of talking about it with you guys. And I kind of just wanted to let it run for 30 games and like actually try it. But so that was a little honestly like the opposite of impressed. I was kind of hoping that that was actually going to pan out more than it did, but it didn't. So that was kind of the couple of guys for me that kind of stood out. I like Stolarz, really like seeing him. Like I
Yeah.
kind of mentioned him earlier, and Hildeby mentioned him too. I saw him in a little action too. So. That was kind of it. Nobody really blew me away. I was kind of hoping to see a little bit more from the top guys even, but I'm not worried about the top guys, so we're good there.
I did like Cowboy, I will say that, but it just sucks that if this was a their roster a couple of years ago, he definitely would have made the roster, but it's just like the timing of what's what kind of sort of thing. And it's good to know that all the development that he's doing is heading in the right direction.
Oh, he's definitely going to be an NHL player, top nine guy for sure. Well, here's a guy who came in with a little bit of a burr in his saddle. He wanted to be traded to Toronto, didn't get his wish, signed the 1 year deal. Berube apparently talked to him, told him there's a spot here for him. So what did he do? He came into camp and he blew the doors off, and you can't say he didn't. And not only with the offensive skill, we all know he has a shot. We all know he can do those things. My issue with Robertson last year is well documented on this show and, of course, across Twitter, is the fact his play away from the puck was my issue. The gaffes, the mistakes in the defensive zone, or even challenging players when he would get stripped of the puck or he'd give it away under pressure. But here in the preseason, and I know it's the preseason, and I know some of the lineups he went up against are not favorable, they're younger players. But for me, he did all the right things. He'd get back on the back check, he'd break up plays, he'd throw the body, which probably led to him having an upper body injury to begin with. But this guy was doing all of the things you want to see, including putting the puck in the net. So for me, Nick Robertson showed up, showed out, and earned his spot in the opening night lineup. I think he's going to be in there for sure. I do think he's another player that you can move up if you need to when you need a little bit more speed or juice and jam. That guy's going to be a guy that moves up in your top six. Right now, I think he's top nine, but that player can definitely move up for you and do more things. I love what Robertson brought. I'm fired up. I want to eat my words that, hey, let the door hit you on the ass on the way out because I want you gone, because I didn't like the trade stuff. I didn't like the complaining. If you have an opportunity, especially in the playoffs, seize it, use it. The top guns were out. You think you're a top gun? You should be in the playoffs and you should be doing something. That was your opportunity to grab the brass ring and do something for this team. But he's done it here in the preseason. Now let's see it over the regular season if you can continue this type of play now that you know you got a spot. Does the fire still burn so hot? I want to know that.
That's true. I really love his game. Even in like I saw a few clips of like a drill or something, and he was puck hounding Matthew Nyes. And I was very happy to see that, like, although Matthew Nyes could probably toss him with one arm, he was actually like giving it his all and he was trying. Besides the one hiccup with Nylander, he was phenomenal. I saw, I
He's
think it
deserving
was
this spot in the
Detroit.
lineup, but taking people out. Come on, now, guys.
I think he stripped the puck. I might have been a Montreal player. Regardless, he stripped the puck in the offensive zone and just went and scored. And I was just like, that is what you need to do. And I'm actually very curious if he's looked at Max Domi to see if like he could try and pull little things that Max Domi does in his game to apply it to himself, because they're very similar in height. And I'm just curious that like maybe he's talked to Domi or something like that. Be like, how can I prove to this team that I can fit in? And I think that he's taking a few pointers from him. Now, he doesn't throw the body obviously as much as Domi, but he's starting to be that little bulldog kind of mentality that I like, of just going to get in the puck, doing what he does best, and putting the puck in the net.
Clarkie, where are you at with Robbie?
I mean, I think his motor has never been his issue. I think his motor has been his deterrent at some points, like his demerits at some points, which is funny to say. You don't say that very often about guys. And I think that Robertson needed to do exactly what he did in this preseason and this training camp to show that he deserved a spot on this roster, because I think it would have been very, very easy for him to completely lose his spot on this team altogether if he didn't show up like the way that he did and score all the goals that he scored. I mean, if you're going to score, what is it, 4 straight games that he played that he got a goal in the preseason, like that's exactly what you need, because it wouldn't have taken Craig Berube very long to snap his fingers and say, okay, well, your spot's gone. Pacioretty's coming in, you're gone. Nylander's going to play center. We're going to put Domi on the wing, you're gone. Like, there's no spot for you if you're not going to work on, or if you're not going to fit into that spot that we need you to fit into. I still don't quite know how they're going to figure out the lines. Like, that's kind of what I was getting to earlier when I was like, what is camp for me? It's like figuring out who's going to play with who. I think that was kind of a big thing. And I still don't think we know. Like, I think we're going to find out. I don't even think we're going to find out game one, to be honest. I think it's going to be one of those things that kind of shifts around a few times, which is fine. Roster flexibility is fine.
I think Patches and Robo have something going on. I think that's a good little chemistry thing. I said that the other night. They look like they click. I mean, it's like old man and young boy, right? Trying to teach him the ropes. But Patches knows where to be, and Robo knows how to get there. So if that can work, I love it.
You just need a centerman to kind of complement both of them. But
John Tavares, come on down.
I don't know if that's Tavares or if that's Yarnko.
Yeah. Put him there. I mean, that was the one thing that I was really concerned about when Pacioretty came on board, was like, okay, so what center are they going to play him with? Because I feel like putting Pacioretty with Tavares is kind of like what – that happened with Bertuzzi and Tavares, like two guys that can't really necessarily skate guys or out skate guys on the same line together. It's not going to work.
No.
And that's happened with Tavares with a couple other players over the last couple of years too. It's like, if you don't put him on a line with two very good skaters, it's almost like you're putting two slow guys out there and it just doesn't work. But what I saw, now this is preseason, who knows who they were playing against, blah, 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 blah. But it didn't seem like Pacioretty and Tavares were out of place together. So maybe that is the play. If you could put Pacioretty and Robertson with Tavares I'd love to make it a third line.
You can also put Domi at center. He played phenomenal in the playoffs there. Like, you could put Domi on the second.
I really think they're looking at Domi to be the de facto Marner number two, where he really started to learn to dish the puck to the higher end guys at the tail end of last season. I really think they want that to be something part of his prowess for this season on the second line, dishing to Willie, dishing to JT, the speed, the skill, the hockey IQ. When he had that with Matthews, when Marner was out, I think that's exactly what they're looking for out of Domi on line two. I could be crazy, but that really seemed to be his MO tail end of last year, was dishing.
Yeah. Like, if we're talking line combos, cause I could go on for this for like half an hour if you want, but I'm looking at, like, I think Nyes, Matthews, Marner. I think that's where you start. Yep. I think some combination of Domi and Nylander on the second line sharing the centerman position would be great. And then who do you put with them? It's probably going to be, if it's a Yarncroke, fine. I'm fine with that, honestly. It's you kind of think maybe he's a third liner, but I'm fine if he's in that mix. With a Pacioretty, Tavares, Robertson third line, because those two lines are interchangeable. They're not.
Put McMahon on the second line.
Put McMahon. That's what I mean. McMahon can fit in there. If that's the case, you have to move out a Yarncroke then, if he's not going to be in the top nine.
So that's who I saw as your person that you partner with, Lily, to go and get your other piece.
That's possible as well, for sure. And that's still a $5 million move out. So I think that would be interesting for sure. And then to me, like Dylan, you mentioned it earlier. I just don't see a spot for David Camp. I think Pontus Holmberg to me is better than David Camp. I think Steven Lorenz is better than David Camp. So now, and they got Connor Dewar, who we didn't even see in the preseason because he's injured. So like you got a fourth line now of some combination of Lorenz, Reeves, Camp, Holmberg, Yarncroke, Dewar. Who did I miss? There's other guys. Like there's just too many bodies that can fit on there. McMahon. I didn't even say McMahon, right? So like you got to find a spot.
McMahon for me has got to be a top six player this year. If he's the same guy that was the tail end from January to the finish of the season before he got hurt, if he's that guy who could put that many goals up and has that shot, plays with physicality, you're looking at a Zach Hyman light.
Yeah.
He should be in your top six.
Okay, so you put McMahon with Domi and Nylander then. And then you can't have $4.5 million in your fourth line with Camp.
No.
You can't have $6 million in your fourth line with Camp, Yarncroke, and Reeves. That's $6 million. And no. Dewar is the same amount as Reeves. So that's you can't have that much. So to me, you got to clear those guys out if you're going to go that way. I hate losing those bodies because they've been useful. I still think Yarncroke can be a useful player on this team.
Same here.
But, and I know you do, James, because we've talked about it, but I just – you can't have that much money on your fourth line. You just can't.
No.
So something's got to change. And I can't honestly for the next like couple days, I can't wait to figure out how they're going to sort this out. That's all camp. I said it earlier, all camp. I just wanted to figure out how this is going to end up and we're still not there yet. And honestly, that's the point of stress and anxiety for me is just like, how are they going to sort this out? Because we have to add Pacioretty and Lorenz, I think. So that means that there's got to be at least two bodies out. And Liljegren. So that's three. So it's like, who's out? What's going to happen? And how are they going to do it? We got to figure this out.
All right, let's find out.
Let me shout out my guy, Kyle Cushman here. This is the tweet I was referring to earlier.
Yeah.
So predicting the roster, he says, Cowan to Junior. We all know that. Pacioretty at 950, Lorenz at 775. IR Dewar, because he's still not back yet. LTIR Yarncroke, Mermis, Hawk and Paw, and Mittens, SOIR. So season opening IR, I guess that's what that means.
Yeah.
Roster would be at 4.4 million over and have an LTIR pool of 4.4. So you'd get away with $333 away from maximizing your LTIR space, which is a Brandon Pridham specialty. I would say you pretty much can book that tweet to solve what we're talking about right now. Give the Leafs probably about what, 2-3 weeks to figure everything out where everybody flushes out, make a deal, make a trade. As Terry Koshan always says, boys, injuries have a way of fixing things. So maybe somebody gets dinged up, Liljegren or someone, that's $3 million more and you sit and you wait on that. But we'll see what happens. But that right there seems like the most logical path going forward. And we also don't even have Mr. McCabe's name in there either, who is dealing with some stuff and may not start opening night for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So there is cap flexibility. So we'll figure out how that happens. But speaking of flexibility, one thing the Leafs have in goal is flexibility. They have Joel, Matt Murray, Stolarz, Hildeby, and then, of course, a couple of more young guys that are trying to ply their trade as well. We're not going to stay too long on the goalie subject because we've talked about them already a bunch of times here at Nauseam. For me, this is probably the most formidable group of goaltenders the Leafs have had in a long while. Seeing what Stolarz could do, seeing what Hildeby was able to produce through the preseason and last season in the minors. And, of course, Matt Murray, if he's able to be even a fraction of what he used to be, that is still a goalie who can probably get you a couple NHL wins. And then, of course, Joe Woll, if he's healthy, he could be the guy, the brick wall everybody wants him to be. We know what he can. So this looks like a great group. And it's been rated by The Athletic, apparently, as the number one tandem in the Atlantic Division. So I'm going to say, hey, let's go and see what it is. But that's before the dominoes fall and the cards will be where they will. But Joel and Stolarz, apparently right now, are the betting favorites as the number one tandem in the Atlantic. Which, you look down the list, it's not really that hard to say. Yeah, it might be. There's no more Allmark and Swayman.
Wait, you're saying that Cam Talbot and Ville Husso aren't better than?
Listen, sir.
What kind of conversation are we having here? Are you're telling me that Allmark and Mads Sogard aren't better? Like, what are we talking about here?
Hey, Vasilevsky and whoever they decide to play behind him.
Yeah.
Whatever soup cans coming in.
Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight? Or is Spencer Knight back? Or what's going to be the case back in Florida?
Spencer Knight back. Is Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight, but we also don't know what we're getting in Spencer Knight either.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. You know what we're getting in our two goalies.
As long as he's healthy, that's the other thing with Joseph Wall, is that's our biggest concern with him. Is it nothing to do?
It's good.
The thing about Joel Wall is the injuries that he's had, though, are not ones that are like recurring ones.
They're not lingering.
It was a freak back injury, a freak ankle injury where he didn't anchor. He said it himself. He didn't anchor his foot properly, and that's what led to the injury. So it was something that he did. It's not like, my ankle's wonky and I have a wonky ankle now for life. No, my back's screwed. My back's going to be screwed forever. It's just things that he's done. You know, literally carried the Leafs on his back in the playoffs and it broke. Sorry. You know, that's basically what happened. End of story. Yeah. But
was that the one in the playoffs?
Yeah, he went out after game six, which is weird because he was sitting at the podium after game six talking to the media with Matthews, and you wouldn't have known that his back was screwed at that point in time. So he must have went to sleep, woke up, and that's when it seized up.
Your body does do interesting things after you have some rest.
But we all can agree, this is probably the best crop of goalies the Leafs have had to rely on in a season since probably the early 2000s. And Dylan, I know you were just a wee beeb at that time, but me and Clark, we remember the Curtis Josephs and the Kimu Schwabe.
Cujo made me fall in love with Hawkins.
Eddie Belfour and Trevor Kidd. And
Man, Corey Schwab, Michael Telfrist.
Oh, dude. Man. Do you want to get into the Vesta Toskala era?
Oh, let's stay away from that. You're clear. We don't need to see a 200-foot puck go behind the wickets of Mr. Vesta Toskala against the New York Islanders. We've all lived that one.
You know his save percentage with the Leafs was like 820 or something? Toskala.
Probably.
Yeah, it was really bad.
All right, let's jump into these subjects here. For me, I'm very excited about a couple of things. If you know last year, guys, I harped on the power play, harped on the PK a lot. Mm-hmm. We have a coach named Lynn Lambert who is very, very, very passionate about his penalty killers. He was up on the bench. He was shouting, running up and down, trying to make sure that everything was where it needed to be. But he was very detail-oriented with his guys and making sure to bark direction, which to me is great. Obviously, he's used to being a head coach. He's used to being the one leading the charge. So I think Chief's going to have to probably maybe settle him down a little bit, that he's not the guy. But he really is, you know, working hand in glove with his PK unit to make sure the Leafs PK is the best it's been. And I love that. The other side of it this season, I don't know if I'm going to like what Mark Savard is bringing to this power play, man. I just don't feel the energy there. I don't feel the cohesiveness. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the regular season will prove me wrong. Maybe they run two units and they really just try to overload with all of the extra talent they have this season to run guys over. But the PK with Lambert, I'm excited for once, which is weird to say, but we needed that last year. It's definitely going to be a help this season. But the power play to me, I know we got the big guns, but it didn't work in Calgary for Savard, and it doesn't look like it's translating here either. But I'll let the jury be out on that one until we see what the season wraps up at. But Clark, are you excited about Lambert with this PK, man? It's pretty
good. Yeah, I mean, that was – I think I might have said it on this show a couple of times last year, but the penalty kill was probably our worst demerit, or like our biggest hole. I guess it's probably the way I want to say it, last year, which is crazy because a couple of years ago it was one of the better ones. And it's just, it was really frustrating to watch how it just kind of tanked last year, compared to what it used to be. So it definitely needed a change. I think I'm going to need to see more of a sample size, and maybe I wasn't paying enough attention in the training camp or preseason or whatever to watch the actual results of the penalty kill. But you know, come game one and as the season rolls, I'm going to want to see that get back up to a top 10 penalty kill. Like if they can get to a top 10 penalty kill, that's going to make a huge difference. And I think, honestly, if they can pair that with a top, you know, hopefully 5 power play, I think that alone should probably allow them, as long as they get good goaltending, allow them to win the Atlantic Division. And I think I heard, I can't remember who was, I think it was like Kipper and Bourne and whoever else was on the panel with David Amber the other night. And they basically said, like, I know it's kind of a joke because we say every year it's like doesn't really matter what they do in the regular season. But honestly, this year it kind of feels like it does matter what they do in the regular season. And I think winning the Atlantic Division should be actually a goal that they try to do this year. They should try to get that division title, lock down first place, see who they end up playing. I'm super tired of playing Florida and Boston. Like, and that's probably,
yes,
depending on what happens with Boston, you know, that's probably 1, 2, 3 again this year. So if you can push yourself into that one spot and not have to worry about one of those teams, and maybe you end up playing like one of those fringe playoff teams that we've been talking about now, maybe a Detroit sneaks in, or maybe who knows,
yeah,
you know,
no, I'm with that.
Like a Buffalo somehow gets in, or an Ottawa or somebody like that, and you can get one of those guys instead. How much better would that be? So we're talking special teams here, so I'm getting way ahead of myself, but I just think that if they can, you know how it goes. One thing leads to another, and then I'm talking about playoff standings. But it's one of those things where I've thought for a couple of years now, James, to your point, the power play, given how many weapons we have on this roster, should have no problem. And this is maybe being biased and a stupid Leaf fan, but this should be a 30% power play. Like, there's no reason it shouldn't be a 30% power play for the season.
There's and also no reason there shouldn't be two units either, because you really can overwhelm teams, and then really they have to decide who they're defending against, whether it's the A
right.
or the B unit, and that could be done this season.
Right, but you have to also look at the units the way that they are, and I know you want to split up the unit, like the top unit. Is that what you're saying with the two units?
Well, listen, even look at the second unit right now. It's still a formidable unit. It's Nyes, Pacioretty, Domi, OEL, and I think McMahon or someone else.
You even put Robertson on there. Like, here's what I was going to say to your point, though, is I don't think they have to split up the units to have two very good units. Like, I still think that second unit that you just mentioned is better than maybe 9 or 10 teams' first units in the league. So, and again, maybe that's me being biased and stupid, but I don't think so. Like, I think that's legitimate. Like, if you get a healthy Max Pacioretty in the trigger spot on the right side, and you get a healthy OEL on the playing the trigger man on the point, I do honestly think that you can get some really good production out of those two veteran players who have been there, done that for years. They have the proven track record. You don't have to rely on OEL to be the 25-minute defenseman that he used to be, but if he can still be a good power play quarterback, like that's still very much in his repertoire. He did it last year with Florida. And Pacioretty, regardless of his age, can handle the trigger spot on a power play still. He's still got the talent. You get Domi distributing the puck. You get Robertson out there doing his thing, or Nyes, you know, messing around in front of the net. Like, that's still a very good unit. So I don't think they have to split up the unit. And I still think that they've underperformed, I'm going to say, the last 3 seasons on their power play, and they've still been a top, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 8 power play. They should have no problem being, I'm going to say, top 2 power play this year. Top 3 is a failure. Like, they should be a top 2 power play.
Yeah, they should be
no problem.
At a high rate.
So when we're talking power play penalty kill, I'm talking there. This should be like the regular season goals that we as fans look for. Top 2 power play, top 10 penalty kill, win the Atlantic Division. That's all I really want to see in the regular season this year. And I don't think it's not unachievable.
I want that trifecta. It's called the Holy Trifecta.
Yeah,
and then you finish it off with the Stanley Cup. So
yeah, hopefully.
No, hopefully no. This is the year.
Yeah,
I'm tired of it. Let's write a different story other than the Toronto Maple Leafs bow out early. Let's write a different tale.
If you can establish
Clark was so
that though.
He left.
Oh, was that me? Oh, sorry, I might have lost connection there for a sec.
He was fed up with you saying hope.
Well, no, but I guess just to wrap that up, like, if you establish your power play and penalty kill the way that they should be able to in the regular season, that stuff carries over to the playoffs.
It does.
And what has been the Leafs' biggest issue in the playoffs? Scoring damn goals when it matters the most. And you have to be able to capitalize on your special teams in the playoffs more than anything. So if they can do that in the regular season, establish it as dominant and elite, that's going to carry over, and that's what we need so badly. So there, that's finishing my point.
I think the biggest thing is trying to take the pressure off themselves come playoff time, because apparently they bitch and complain in the playoffs, and they don't know how to shoot the puck come playoff time.
If you don't know what Dylan's referring to, go watch the Amazon doc series episode.
I still haven't watched that. I got to get on that.
Watch it. We'll understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've already talked about patches. We talked about the centers. Let's talk about a little bit of Berube hockey. And we saw it on Saturday night. It was the Lorenz hit, the Reeves hit, the Lorenz goal. Those little things are going to be key to going throughout the lineup. That is what Chief's going to be looking for. That is what he's going to want to have happen with this squad. And I saw a tweet the other day, and I thought it was perfect. This team may have more bumps and bruises, and guys miss a couple of games because of injuries, because of the different way they're going to play, but it will serve them well come playoff time. So guys being more physical, guys having a little bit more doggedness and determination, sticking up for each other. I like the players we brought in to fit that mold, the Tanevs, the OELs. Everybody's like, why do you say OEL? Watch him through the playoff run. He was taking no prisoners. He'd grab a guy by the collar, no problem. Guy like Yanni Hakanpaa, same thing. But that translates throughout your lineup. Guy like Max Pacioretty, he's not afraid to grab a guy. I'm not going to say he's going to scrap, but he's not going to let people stand around and do shit to his players. He was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens for a reason. Not because he got shoved around and yelled at all the time. He stood up for his players and did the right things. The Leafs have that throughout the lineup. I think you're going to see also an unleashed JT under Berube as well. Because there's no C on his chest. This guy wants a contract here in Toronto, and he wants to stay. I think you're going to see a little less pressure on him and a more productive John Tavares, like season number one with the Maple Leafs.
Did you guys see the little clip on social media of the – I think it was after their little Muskoka trip that they all went on?
Yep.
And they were jumping on a bus, but they had a social media person there, and I think the question was, like, at what year – what birth year do you consider old?
Mm-hmm.
And they were having some fun with it and stuff. Guys were saying, like, you know, in the 80s or whatever is old now, or, you know, some Matthew Nyes was like 95. And I'm like, screw this guy. Yeah. Screw that guy. But John Tavares came kind of bouncing in to the one. There was a group of four guys or whatever. And he kind of came bouncing in. And he's like, you know, somebody said 80 anything in the 80s. And Johnny's like, I'm a 90, so I'm clear. I'm good. And I was like, what personality is this that we are seeing? Is this John Tavares having fun? Yeah. Like, could we see John
Tavares takes all the pressure off?
Honestly, though, could we see a John Tavares with a completely different personality this year, which would lead to a better season in general for him? Like, if he's not having to be hoity-toity Leafs captain, you know, boring John Tavares.
There you go.
Yeah, like the John Tavares that Steve Dangle makes fun of, you know, building IKEA furniture. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's not that guy, are we going to see, like, a fun, bouncy John Tavares? And could that lead to a whole different team personality in general?
Like I just said, season one John Tavares with the Maple Leafs was not a captain with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right.
And it was one of his most productive, fun seasons. So
with Mitch. He put up 47
goals. And, I mean, that was 5-6 years ago, but still, like – he's the same player. I think anybody who watches John Tavares over the past few years, yes, his goal numbers haven't been that high, but he hasn't changed much as a player. He's the same player. Has he lost a step a little bit?
Maybe.
Not maybe a little bit, but honestly, not really. He never had the step. He's still a smart player. He's still got the shot. You saw the shot the other night when he sniped one in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a clear shot. He just beat the goalie with it.
You know what I think he's always been good at is if you look at his line, he's been the person that his line mates can complement. So, like, in Mitch's case, he's the guy that could shoot the puck. And in Willie's case, he's the guy that can dish the puck. And I think that's very, very key in who is next to him. I really love that about John. But
he's always been that way too. If you think back to his Islanders days, Matt Molson got 40 goals on John Tavares's line because John Tavares just was able to make that line play so well together. Who else was on his line? Like Kyle Okposo, Mark Parrish.
What do they say the mark of a good player is, right? making those players around you better.
Like you said, Dylan, like if JT's here, he brings his line mates up to his level, and you always know what you're getting out of his lines. And I feel like that's been really important. And if you put a Max Pacioretty on there to get his game back to where it was possibly, and a Nick Robertson brings his game up to that level because he's on the line with two established NHL vets and he feels the pressure to play up to their level, like that could be a magical third line. So, yeah, that's exciting.
You know what excites me most of this Leafs team? The fact that a certain individual, he left last year at 6'3", 217 pounds, the same weight as a superstar on the team. And he came back to camp with, let's say, 3-4 months, maybe 10 pounds heavier. I cannot tell you how hard it is to put on weight, let alone muscle.
It's not that hard, Dylan. The weight part. Wait,
for somebody like me, it is.
I know. I'm bugging you.
Some people it's easy. Some people it's harder. This Matthew Nyes guy is going to be Chiefs' favorite freaking player. I'll tell you that much. Hands down, he's going to have a unbelievable year.
Yeah, he's going to be your prototypical power forward on that front line, and I can't wait. And also, to further your thought, Dylan, on the 10 pounds he gained, I don't remember the name of the coach, but he was with some coaches. Down in Minnesota, I think it was.
I just saw
where he was. But anyways, they were raving about not only the weight that he put on, but the way that he still has the fluidity, the skating and everything is still there, and the movement. He's not bulky in the sense of you put on 10 pounds, you're more slower in your movement. He's still there and ready to go, which is amazing.
Cal Dietz, their main focus was improving Nyes' power and speed. Dietz, who has worked with hundreds of NHL players over the years, praise Nyes as he is an exceptional athlete, calling him a unit at 227. He has explosive abilities, which stood out. And then they collaborated with strength coach Louis Rojas. I don't know if you guys know him, but yeah.
These 27 goals, 33 assists for Matthew Nyes. Okay.
Nyes said these drills made him faster and give him a better first step, while refining his agility, skating posture with the help of Leafs skating coach Paul Matheson.
Good old Paul. What's going on, Paul? I know you're watching. So I appreciate you, buddy.
But yeah, like just to go back to the Berube hockey and wrap up the point here, James, if you don't mind. Like, I just think that it's so funny because they put out that clip. Somebody put out a clip of the playoffs, and maybe it's because of the Amazon series. I'd have to watch the Amazon series to really know, but it's basically Keith saying all the same stuff that he said for years, right? Clean shots, we're not scoring on any of them. We got to get more traffic in the, thumbs up. We got to get more traffic to the net. We got to do this, we got to do that. And it just seems like, you know, that's all the right things to say, but it just wasn't getting through to the guys for whatever reason, or whatever he was trying to implement with what he was saying wasn't the right stuff to implement. I still feel like I don't think Berube is going to come in and necessarily reinvent the team, but there's a couple new pieces around that are just going to give that little extra difference that we aren't used to seeing, especially if we can get a healthy Yanni Hakanpää. I still think he's going to be a solid, like one of our favorite players. I think come November, come December, when we are doing these shows, if he's healthy, I think we're going to be like, oh man, we all love this guy so much. Like he's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
I really do think so. Tanev coming in, bringing that tenacity that he has. OEL is a different look back there. And I just think that we're going to look at this team in a different way than we did with this Keefe team, regardless of the fact that they ran it back again. I just don't see it that way. I think the fringe pieces are too different now to say that, like, the defensive group's totally different. You know, we're feeling really confident with our goalies. There's different pieces in the forward group this year. The forward groups are going to look different in terms of the shuffling. And I just think that Craig Berube is going to bring some sort of attitude to him that is going to feed into these players' mindsets and the way that they approach the game, the way that the confidence levels that they have. So the way I look at it, I think it's not like Berube is going to come in and sit and like change the entire team. It's going to be more of like a confidence level, an attitude level, a thing like that, that I think is just going to overall be a type of hockey that we haven't seen necessarily since the Keefe era started.
No, I fully agree with that. All right, well, let's wrap this up. with Jeremy Swayman. This has been a saga. He's taking shots at the Spit and Chicklets boys. This has been crazy. And then not just him. It was, what's his name? Sweeney over in Boston taking the shots at the Spit and Chicklets boys, but it was all over the same contract. Lo and behold, it comes in pretty much what those boys were talking about. It sucks for Leaf fans that Swayman's going to be there. Hopefully he takes a little bit to get up to speed and the Bruins can maybe dig themselves a little hole with Jonas Korpisalo. We'll see what happens. But what do we think of the contract here? Obviously, a lot of comparables here to Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews getting paid out of their ELCs and their Bridge China deals and all that kind of stuff. They're saying, hey, you're paying a player before you know exactly what he is, because it has been the all Mark Swayman show in Boston. Now it's going to be strictly the Swayman show, and hopefully not the Korpisalo show for Boston fans after seeing the goals he's let in. But what do we think of the Swayman deal and the fact that, hey, it's pretty much 64.5 million reasons to sign a deal, right?
I truthfully, after seeing the Amazon series, I think Sway's going to – he's just going to hold down the fort in Boston, and he's going to do well there. He is a very emotional human being. So, I mean, if you're ever trying to, like, throw him off his game, just get him right in the feels. I think he's a true number one. I saw his, like, pregame ritual, and I thought it was insane. I've never seen a goalie do something like that, but whatever works. I don't know if it was worth the fight over $2 million as Neely said, they offered 64, but he got 66. So I don't exactly know what the whole big kerfuffle was.
I think it was 68 he got to.
No, 68, whatever. Regardless, I think he's worth it. I think he proved this past playoffs that he was their number one. Allmark was the guy that, you know, was sitting on the bench. And I truly do believe that if Swayman was not in net, the Leafs would have made it past Boston, matter of fact. So, yeah, I think he's solid there in Boston, unfortunately.
Clarky, your final thoughts on Mr. Swayman?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little surprised that he had any leverage whatsoever, especially because he's an RFA. I know he had the nice playoffs and everything, and I know he's been a good goalie, but if you look at his games played, I mean, he still doesn't have that many games to his name, especially as a goalie. You know, they don't get, obviously, they never have a chance to really get 82 games in a season. And I don't know if anyone can look it up right now off the top of your head, how many game starts that he's actually had in his career, and what are the highest numbers that he's had? Like, what's his season high in terms of starts? I'd be curious. And I think of some goalies. Hasilevsky. Oh, sorry. Did I cut out there?
Game started 43 last year, 33 the year before, 39 the year before that.
Okay. So he's around 40. So I guess that's not that low. I was expecting it to be a little lower just with the Allmark swap, but, regardless, like, he still hasn't, you know, he hasn't put himself in the Vezina conversation yet necessarily. He hasn't won a Conn Smythe like some goalies have in that conversation. So I was just a little surprised that he even had as much leverage as he ended up getting. So good for him. But I was kind of thinking he was probably more in the, you know, seven-ish range. But for him to get basically right around where Connor Hellebuck is and right around where some of those other guys are, I was a little surprised personally. I was kind of hoping they were going to trade him. I was kind of hoping he'd go out west.
Yeah.
I saw somebody talking about trading him to Utah, and I was like, that's perfect. Get him to Utah. Get him out of here. I'd rather not have to play him because he's a good goalie. I'm not saying he's a bad goalie at all. I'm saying he's a $7 million goalie. Maybe not an $8 million.
Complimenting him in the way of, like, get him the hell out of here.
Get him out of here.
You know? It's still going to be an interesting dynamic to see what it's like in Boston, though, where now it's just Swayman without Allmark, and how that factors into everything, right? And factors into the team. Also, they've made changes up front. They made changes on the back end. So we'll see how it all shakes out for the Bruins. But as for the Maple Leafs, boys, it all begins Wednesday night. We are back. Leafs season, regular season.
We're back.
Finally. God damn it. Still on afternoons. Can't watch the game that much.
Yeah, I have a baseball practice, so I'm probably going to be like half in, half out the whole night, but we'll see.
I'll keep you guys updated. Don't you worry. But yeah. Leafs Nation, this right here is where the Maple Leafs come to talk. It's Offside Hockey Talk. We're in your ears, hopefully Sundays and Mondays. But tune in, join us, have fun. Follow Clark Monroe over on Twitter. Follow Mr. D4 for Dylan Fournier. And as always, he's got one final.
One more thing. I just see that Sheffy's in the comments. I saw Sheffy watching, Sheffy Bones. I just want to give a huge shout out to Derek because that guy has been through such an amazing journey and I've been following it every step of the way. It's inspired me to go through my weight loss journey and I've seen him reach some goals that I know he probably wasn't sure he was going to necessarily reach. And to see him getting as far as he's gone, I hope he's still watching, has been so great. And I just saw him do a flex Friday the other day. On Friday with a flex pick. And I just think he's doing such great things. And I just want to give a huge shout out to Sheffy because he's a great guy. He's been following all of us for years. And he was such a huge supporter when I was bigger on TikTok and like actually trying on TikTok. So I just want to give a huge shout out to Sheffy because he's a great guy and he's doing great things. And it's just so cool to see how well he's been doing.
Yeah. Shout out, Derek. We love you, buddy. Cannot wait to see you walking in Eastern Passage, probably tomorrow because I'll be out that way. So we'll see you soon. But, guys, thanks for joining us. 254 strong right now on the live. Appreciate you all. Looking forward to doing this all season long, guys. The Leafs are back. We're back. You know what it is. It's Offside Hockey Talk where the Maple Leafs and hockey come to talk.